From NPR and Chicago Public Radio, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Kansel, and here's your host at the Chase Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Whoa, thank you all. You are correct to be excited. We have got a great show for you today. A former baseball all-star, Doug Glanville, will join us here to tell us finally what they talk about during those meetings on the pitcher's mound. Do they compare luxury cars? What? We don't know. He'll tell us. But first, I got a bone to pick with you all, my fellow public radio listeners. NPR News recently did a survey of their listeners' favorite beach reading. You know, lighter fare for summertime, mindless stuff. Among the finalists submitted by NPR listeners, The Brothers Karamazov and that perennial guilty pleasure, War and Peace. Now, look, you're my peeps and nobody else is listening. Come on, guys. Haven't we had enough sand kicked in our faces? I thought we agreed to keep this quiet. Remember, anybody asks, you love Danielle Steele. And please cover up your copy of Immanuel Kant's Critique of Practical Reason with the Us Weekly we gave you, okay? Now back to business. Give us a call. Play our games. The number 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Well, hello. This is Ray Craig from York County, dare I say it, South Carolina.
You said it. You said it. So are you folks from South Carolina having to be a little apologetic, or you're just bracing yourself for the reaction when you introduce yourself?
Well, you know, it's hard to say. This is the governor who, in a previous incident, took barnyard critters to the state house.
Yeah.
And
I don't even want to ask why, knowing that guy.
Well,
he was in love with them.
It was love.
You know, it wasn't an agricultural exhibition. It was a love story.
And so you couple his previous history with this most recent affair.
Yeah.
And I think he's going to be put down in our state's history as being known for both a pig and a poke.
No. Oh, you've been working on that one.
Rim shot.
Yeah. I would criticize you for cheap humor if I had any standing to do so.
Well, thank you, Peter.
Welcome to our show, Ray. Let me introduce you to our panel. First, it's author and humorist and the man behind everything you might find and you will find at Baudette.com, Mr. Tom Baudette.
Hello, Ray.
How you doing?
I'm good.
Next, the deputy editor and blogger for the Houston Chronicle, Ms. Curie O'Connor.
Hi, Ray.
Hi-ho.
And next, television personality and a contributor to CBS Sunday Morning, Mr. Mo Rocca.
How you doing?
Hi, Ray. I'm good. I'm well.
Welcome to the show, Ray. You're going to start us off with Who's Carl This Time. Carl Kansel is going to read you three quotes from the week's news. If you can correctly identify or explain just two of them, you'll win our prize. Carl's voice on your home answering machine. Ready to go?
Ready to go. Super cool.
Indeed.
Wow.
I love that southern idiom.
Thank
Here
you.
Is your first quote.
If we are able to stop Obama on this, it'll be his Waterloo. It will break him.
That was your own senator, Senator Jim DeMint of South Carolina. He was setting a high-minded and collegial tone for the increasingly angry debate about what?
Well, I'm going to take a stab in the dark, Peter, and say that it may have something to do with health care.
Yes, indeed. It was the health reform proposals. Now, for those who do not follow history, Waterloo is a catchy dance number by ABBA. Perhaps, and we're not sure, in his metaphor, DeMint was contrasting the health reform proposal with the more successful stimulus bill, which was Obama's dancing queen.
Right.
This week, as the healthcare debate went forward, things got personal. For instance, Republican Representative Paul Brown of Georgia said the president's plan is, quote, gonna kill people, unquote. Obama responded by showing up everywhere this week, from the Today Show to airline safety videos. He was the guy pointing at the exits. In a primetime press conference on Wednesday, he assured us all that the plan won't increase the deficit and that the government will not, in fact, deny you care and leave you to die unless, of course, a bipartisan health care management committee decides we need your organs.
If If my head explodes trying to understand the health care debate, will my current plan cover the cost of reconstructive surgery?
No, I got so confused, Mo, I thought I had ADD. Seriously, and I went to my doctor, and he gave me medication, and my insurance covered it, and I've forgotten what the problem was.
It worked out.
So that's pretty much the way it's supposed to go. Yeah. Good.
Now, this is interesting. As you know, one of the big problems is there's costs incurred if you expand coverage to include everybody else. Somebody has to pay for it. It's been a problem. Obama came up with a way to pay for it. They are going to release special edition Obama brand mom jeans.
Mm.
Loose fitting, very comfortable. And very unflattering and sexless, as befitting our new socialist paradise. So that will be good for everybody. All right, Ray, here is your next quote. It is a senior administration official, as they like to say, doing some sensitive personal diplomacy this week with the president of Ukraine.
They are the most beautiful women in the world. That's my observation. It's certain. You have so many beautiful women.
Who decided to find common ground with the president of Ukraine by using his patented method of automatic talking?
Would this be our illustrious vice president?
Yes, very good, Joe Biden. Very good. Biden has spent a lot of time since taking office as vice president traveling to foreign lands, very far away foreign lands. Perhaps you wonder why. This is why. Biden was overheard saying that while visiting a pub with President Viktor Yushchenko of the Ukraine. They had already discussed the serious issues, military and trade cooperation, and whether those brides you can order on those websites really look like their pictures. He was curious. He had heard so much about that. Vice President Biden went from there to Amsterdam, where he was overheard saying to Dutch Prime Minister Jan-Pieter Balkenende, quote, "You guys have got some killer reefer here. You really do." All right. Your last quote is from somebody who's completely obscure. He's a 73-year-old British scientist named Gary Peach. And he's making an extraordinary claim about a famous phrase that was uttered 40 years ago this week.
I thought, being Americans, they might say something like, "Holy chicken bleep. Look at all that bleeping dust." I felt that would not be a suitable thing to be quoted in history books until eternity.
So that's why, Mr. Peach says, he wrote one of the most famous statements in history. What did he come up with to replace, "Look at all that bleeping dust"?
Well, I'm going to guess, could it be Neil Armstrong's famous statement?
Which was?
One small step for a man, one giant leap for mankind.
Yes, indeed. Although I appreciate you giving the full one. Mm-hmm. On the 40th anniversary of the moon landing, various people are coming out of the woodwork to claim a part of that history. One of them is Mr. Peach. He was working, this is true, in one of the NASA tracking stations in Australia, working on the moon mission. And he says, though, that he suggested Neil Armstrong's famous line to a supervisor who sent it on to Houston. Although, of course, Armstrong famously left out the A before A man.
Right.
Now, Armstrong, by the way, has always maintained since then that he thought up that phrase and that he screwed it up entirely by himself. Now, a lot of people have wondered on this 40th anniversary why we have never gone back to the moon after the Apollo missions. Well, it's because, if you think about it, it's obvious. It's because the astronauts were essentially American tourists, and they did what all American tourists did. They walked around. They became unhappy that nobody spoke English and that there were no McDonald's, and they decided just to take a cruise next time instead.
Well, and isn't the moon out of the health network, too?
Exactly.
Wasn't that part of the problem?
Can't get coverage. It's a pre-existing satellite. Carl, how did Ray do in our quiz?
Ray was perfect, Peter. Three correct answers. Ray, you win our prize.
Well done, Ray. Congratulations.
Thank you so much. You guys rock.
Fly me to the moon. Let me play among the stars. And let me see what spring is like on Jupiter and Mars.
Right now, panel, time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Kiri, this week, California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger posted a video online in which he thanked his constituents for submitting various ideas to deal with a massive budget crisis in his state. One thing, though, that was odd about the video As a lot of people wondered why the governor is doing what at the very beginning of the video?
I actually know the answer to this one. He has this big honking knife.
Yes. He's brandishing an enormous knife. The video starts with Arnold looking at the blade, presumably wondering if he should wipe the predator blood off it. Then, you know, he sets it down and he looks into the camera and he begins the statement and goes on without acknowledging the deadly weapon he was just holding in his hands. So the media in California and nation sort of gave him sort of a blank stare. Governor, what are you doing? So on Thursday, the governor clarified that he was just trying to lighten the mood with the knife. He urged everyone to, quote, just relax and have a little bit of a sense of humor. Or I'll cut you. I'll cut you, man.
Well, it was a really remarkable statement, too, because he said he wasn't an El Stiffo like the
yes,
other governors.
He said he is not an El Stiffo, and that is not, by the way, for those who are wondering, the Argentinian nickname for South Carolina Governor Mark Sanchez. That is. It's time right now for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game on the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Lynn Cruthards from Shreveport, Louisiana.
Hi, how are things in beautiful Shreveport?
Oh, beautiful.
Of course, that's why.
Warm as usual.
Uh-huh, and colorful and just filled with all kinds of interesting things to do.
Absolutely.
Well, welcome to our show, Lynn. Now, you're going to play the game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is Lynn's topic?
You can't be too careful. Well, maybe you can.
People are worried, especially about staying safe these days. This week we saw a story about people taking that one step too far in an attempt to get just one more layer of security. Our panelists are going to tell you three stories of precautions getting out of hand. Choose the real story. You'll win Carl's voice on your home answering machine. First, let's hear from Tom Baudet.
In these troubling times, what man hasn't fantasized about protecting his house and home with a moat of fire? But actually doing it would be crazy. So would building a catapult, armoring your windowsills with 6-inch steel spikes, and digging an escape tunnel. The newspapers called me loony, said a defiant Walter Chapman from the burn unit at Gleddonshire Critical Care in northwest England. The neighbors phoned the police. A crowd of people milled about my garden gate, having a laugh. But nobody thought it was funny when a 200-pound boulder from Chapman's catapult crashed through the roof of a nearby shop. The crowd scattered when the moat of fire leapt into action, igniting Chapman's entire house. A blackened Chapman emerged from his tunnel into the waiting arms of police and firefighters who were unable to battle the blaze through the defensive perimeter. Asked if he had any regrets, Chapman said only, "They never got in the place, by God. They never even got close."
A man goes a little too far with the theory that his home is his castle. Your next story of someone putting safety first comes from Kiri O'Connor.
Air Canada had a problem. Not enough passengers on its flights paid attention during the flight attendant's safety lecture. So they tried a little experiment, hiring comedian Michael Berube to do the safety lecture on a Toronto to Vancouver flight. Things started out badly when Berube, pacing the aisle, said, "Boy, it's been a while since I saw so many people in elastic waist pants." Then he suggested the couple in row 9 put their baby in the overhead bin. And it got a little worse when he opined that the man in row 12 didn't look bright enough to handle the emergency door. But when he refused to give the water landing instructions because, "If we go down, we're just going to be a grease spot in Saskatchewan," the fur flew, and the earphones and muffins and magazines all aimed at his head. Berube had to hide behind the bulkhead for cover. Air Canada said it won't repeat the experiment. But Berube is unrepentant, saying, "Didn't they ever listen to my act?"
The comedian doing the aircraft safety lecture did not work. Your last story of extreme security comes from Mo Rocca.
In South Africa, the breaking in of and theft from ATMs has reached epidemic proportions. But now the vulnerable little cash dispensers are taking back the night with pepper spray, the painful aerosol defense that temporarily blinds the would-be attacker. Pepper spray is often carried by women traveling alone. The ATMs of South Africa's Absa Bank are using it to tell miscreants that no cash balance means no cash balance. The ATM with this capability is a tough mother. Problem is, there's no human oversight. If the software detects an attempted break-in, all hell breaks loose. Hence the accidental blinding of technicians trying to fix one trigger-happy machine. What's next? A Little Shop of Horrors ATM that swallows the writer of a bad check whole?
All right. Let's review your choices, Lynn. From Tom Bodad, a man who attempted to protect his home with a moat of fire, not to mention spikes and a catapult, and paid the price. From Kerry O'Connor, an experiment in which an airline decided to use a comedian to get people to finally pay attention to those safety lectures. That didn't work out. Or from Mo Rocca, the stories of how ATMs in South Africa are now armed with pepper spray, which I guess they can attack you with if they don't like the way you punch their numbers. Which of these is the story of a real attempted security that may have gone too far?
All these stories are incredible. There's nothing I can do but I'll say three.
You're going to go from Mo's story then? That's one about the ATMs and their pepper spray. All right, well, we spoke to somebody who was an expert on this sort of thing to get his opinion.
Anytime you put a mechanism in a human interface that could spray debilitating chemicals in your face just seems to be a little outrageous to me.
Don't you think? That was Chris Magui. He's the president of Magui Security Consulting in Los Angeles, California, and he won't be putting pepper spray in his ATMs. Congratulations, you got it right. Mo's story was the real one.
Right.
You earned a point from Mo Rocca. Just for being honest, you have won our prize, Carl Castle's voice on your home answering machine, which will never hurt you. I just want you to know that. Thank you so much, Lynn, for playing.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And now the game where we invite on those who've done memorable things to do something they'd rather forget. Doug Glanville was an all-star outfielder with the Cubs and Phillies and Rangers, and he succeeded despite a terrible handicap, something he sometimes had to keep secret. Fact is, Doug Glanville, pro baseball player, is really smart. The Ivy League graduate is now a businessman here in Chicago. He's a columnist as well for the New York Times Online. Doug Glanville, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you.
This is true, though. You're an Ivy League graduate, University of Pennsylvania, with a degree in engineering, right?
Yes.
And yet you succeeded in professional athletics. You're such a heartwarming story in that way.
Well, baseball is physics.
Yeah, I know.
I just had my calculator in my back pocket every time I went to hit.
Really?
Whatever it takes.
You Poindexter, you. Well, was this actually difficult for you? Because, I mean, a lot of baseball players don't go to college. But was it actually tricky? Did they make fun of you?
I think it was tougher in the minor leagues, actually, because now you're in the middle of the heartland, and you're trying to make it, and nobody knows where you are, and they're wondering why I'm reading, you know, the book on, you know, the African history or something like that. So,
right.
What do you read at the beach?
Us Weekly.
There you go. As far as anyone's concerned, Bennett.
Keeping it real.
I remember they used to say about Mo Berg, who was the very educated guy, said he could speak seven languages and couldn't hit in any of them. I don't want to be too jokey about this, but is it a disadvantage to be too smart about baseball? I mean, can you overthink the game?
Oh, there's no question. I mean, I love baseball partly because that was my refuge where I can relax and not really think too much. I mean, my brother taught me the game. I could kind of go blank out there and just play, hit the ball, see the ball, hit the ball. unfortunately, when you get your mind a little too involved, you can kind of work yourself out and not. You're trying to figure out what the pitcher's doing. You hear the popcorn guy asking for, soda, and that's something's wrong with that, obviously. You're talking to the peanut guy. So that's when you're getting in trouble, when you're actually hearing everything going around.
That's actually a question I wanted to ask, because these modern baseball stadiums, there's as many as 50,000 people there. How in the world do you concentrate on what you're doing, surrounded by all those people, many of whom are letting you know how much they hate you?
Well, you ever notice the helmets have two ear flaps?
Really?
Yeah. That's what helps. You just muffle everything and hope you don't hear anything.
Like a Bose baseball helmet.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Can I patent that, actually? My engineering degree might help me.
Noise cancellation sports equipment.
Do you get used to it? Is it just something that in a lifetime of athletic competition you just get used to just being in front of so many people, or is it
It's still tough. I mean, you start to have fun with it. When I was in Philadelphia, my senior thesis for college, I went to Penn in Philly, so when I got traded to Philadelphia, they were ready for me. They'd looked at my bio. They followed my resume. So, you know, I'm in the outfield one day, and they knew my thesis was about designing a stadium at 30th Street Station. So,
right, in Philadelphia.
Yeah, they were like, oh, this is cool. So one month in early in the season, April, I didn't hit very well. I was hitting like 180 to start the season. So one of the fans yelled at me. He said, hey, Glanville, why don't you design a stadium you can hit in?
That's pretty good.
And that is an NPR listener.
There you go. Sometimes players seem to get upset, though. Sometimes players seem to get exercised a little bit about the fans.
You know, I've seen a couple crazy things. You know, I've seen a few players end up in the stands.
Really?
It does happen, and it's probably not a good idea since it's one on 50,000.
Right.
So your odds are not really that good.
Yeah, but you have a bat, though. That must help.
You have a bat, yeah.
One of the things you've written about so well in your New York Times online column, which has just been great, because, you know, generally speaking, you athletes don't talk much about, well, being who you are. It's a very closed world, it seems. You don't want to reveal a lot. But you talk a lot about the actual terror and pressure of being a pro athlete. Is that typical? You mean all those guys who look so cool, they're really kind of terrified or excited or angry or whatever?
Yeah, we're that 12-year-old kid just screaming at the bus going by, basically.
Really?
Inside. So we're, you know, it's one of those secrets, I guess, to some degree that I'm trying to share with the world writing. I mean, there's no question that you have to keep that exterior. You have to be in the bubble so you can perform well and be someone in control. But, you know, deep down, performing every day, 162 games a year, it does start to wear on you, and you're aware of the magnitude of the people watching you.
There's something kind of appealing about the idea of a touchy-feely sort of new baseball world where if you strike out, you just sort of drop to your knees and weep.
Yeah.
Just let it out. Just cry it out.
Yeah, that would be good. And then you start getting sponsors by Kleenex.
That's exciting.
Yeah, that's fine.
Various, the makers of Valium, Prozac, or pharmaceuticals. Sure. All right, some baseball geekery questions. One thing I've always wondered, you get a single, you get a walk, you get to first base. The guys on the opposite teams always talk to the first baseman. You're always a little chatting. There's a little chatting. What are you guys chatting about?
Yeah, you know, how's the baby? You know, how's everybody doing? Most of the time, if you have to think of it this way, if you get a hit, you're feeling pretty good.
Yeah.
So you're willing to talk to anybody, you know.
You're out there and you're saying to the opposing first baseman, you see that? Yeah. I just knocked that right over his head, man. I'm good.
Absolutely. And
really?
And then, of course, sometimes the official score. You're not sure if it's a hit or an error.
Yeah.
And you don't want to look like you're kind of being selfish and checking the scoreboard to see if the guy scored a hit.
Yeah.
So you kind of, you know, look at the first baseman and say, hey, what'd he give you, man? What'd he give me? What'd he score? Okay. Yeah,
that's cool.
And then, you know, you look like you're, let's go, team, let's go, because you got a hit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You also, you've said very nice things about umpires, which seems contrary to what we'd expect.
Right. Well, I'm trying to share the love out there.
Yeah, you're trying to share the love.
You know, these guys, and what people don't realize is coming up in the minor leagues, when you're trying to make it to the major leagues, you actually are side by side with developing umpires.
Right, you're all coming up together.
Yeah, so you're eating in the flea-bitten hotel together. You're doing whatever it takes to make it. And once you get to the big leagues, you see the same guy. So I just gave a shout-out, and I heard from some umpires. It was a wonderful feedback, and I'm glad that they are, you know, didn't turn out to be the bad guys all the
right,
time.
Right. Did you ever get thrown out of a game? Did you ever get into altercation with an umpire?
I did not, actually. But in the minor leagues, I charged the mound.
Did you really?
Yeah, and I actually predicted it because the guy hit a home run off the pitcher. He was frustrated, so they threw the next ball at my head. And, you know, I ran out there, and then halfway there, I realized, you know what? I haven't been in a whole lot of fights.
All right. You're like, oh, I'm going to get him. And you're running out, and you're like, wait a minute. I'm an engineering major from UPenn.
Someone call timeout. Call timeout.
What did you do?
Well, I ducked my head, and I was waiting for the rest of my team to get there.
So, as they are supposed to do, according to baseball etiquette.
After I was put in a full Nelson by the wrestling high school phenomenon that was the catcher of the opposing team.
Right.
That was it. I was pretty much face down and waiting.
But you got some points. Oh, he charged the mound.
Yeah.
He's a hothead.
Yeah,
you know.
Don't mess with Glanville.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. All right, Doug Glanville. We're so glad to have you here. We've invited you here to play a game we're calling...
And That's the Way It Is, or Was.
As everyone knows, legendary newsman Walter Cronkite passed away last weekend at the age of 92. We thought we would pay tribute to him in our own way by asking you three questions about the less well-known aspects of his long and interesting life. Answer two questions correctly, you'll win our prize for one of our listeners, Carl Castle's voice, on their home answering machine. So, Carl, who is Doug Glanville playing for?
Doug is playing for Mike Savini of San Jose, California.
Ready to go?
All right, Mike.
First question. Unlike his 1960s rivals Huntley and Brinkley, Cronkite worked alone as the anchor of the evening news, but he didn't always go solo. When he hosted the CBS Morning News, he was partnered with whom, among others? A puppet called Charlemagne the Lion, B, Johnny the Barking News Seal, or C, blonde bombshell and, quote, glamour correspondent Mamie Van Doren?
Was I born at this time? I don't
you
know.
You were not born.
I was not born, so I got a free pass for getting this wrong.
Right.
So I will say C.
You're going to say C, Mamie Van Doren.
Mima,
she was
great.
The bomb. She was, of course, the Anna Nicole Smith of her day, if you will.
Absolutely.
Did she think she'd know? Sadly, no. He actually worked with a puppet called Charlemagne the Lion. A little lion with a crown. It was an attempt to compete with NBC's Today Show, which was co-hosted by a chimpanzee named J. Fred Muggs.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Thank God television has gotten a lot more classy since then. Now, it wouldn't be co-hosted by a chimpanzee. It would be hosted by a chimpanzee.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, you still have two more chances here.
Two more.
This is two more strikes. This is two more pitches. You know,
that's
three
it,
strikes.
No problem. Three
Next
strike.
Question. During his lengthy career, he acquired many nicknames. One of them was Uncle Walter. What was another nickname for Walter Cronkite? Was it A, the eyebrows of doom, B, old iron pants, or C, sex machine?
Let's see. Let me hear A again.
You're going to hear A again. Was the eyebrows of doom.
Wow, that is pretty fitting.
Yeah. Old iron pants or sex machine?
I'm going to say the eyebrows of doom.
You're going to say the eyebrows of doom?
Just because really? I like it.
You like the eyebrows of Doom?
It's a great video game, Doom.
You're just going to go with that?
Well, I'm trying to get him on my voicemail.
I know. You're not playing for yourself. This is a charity game.
Can I change my answer?
You may change your answer.
Can I try B?
Yes, you may. Yeah. Old iron pants.
All right.
You assume he was called this for the way he could just man that anchor chair for hours at a time. Old iron pants, Cronkite. Last question, and this is for all the marbles. Among the many plaudits and honors Cronkite received in his life was which of these? A, in a 1974 Playgirl magazine poll, he was named as having the, quote, sexiest voice ever. B, in Holland, they called news anchors, quote, Cronkites. Or C, the North American Mustache Association newsletter used him as their cover model a record 8 times.
You know, I think it would be very flattering to be called a Cronkite.
You think so? Is that your choice?
That's my choice.
You're right! Well done! This is back in the 60s. This is back in the 60s when TV news was relatively new, and you could tune in your house in Rotterdam, or in Sweden, by the way, and you would watch the Cronkites read the news. Very good. Carl, how did Doug Glanville do in our quiz?
Oh, Doug batted 2 for 3, Peter, and that's good enough to win for Mike Savini.
Whoa!
Nice! All right.
Doug Glanville is a contributing columnist on baseball to the opinion page of nytimes.com, newyorktimes.com, and he has the best career batting average of any New York Times columnist.
Well, that's because Maureen Dowd throws like a girl.
I do. Doug, thank you so much for joining us on My Way Down. What a pleasure to have you. Doug Glanville, ladies and gentlemen. Right now, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Tom, let's go back to the moon landing. As part of the 40th anniversary celebration, NASA admitted that they no longer had the original videotapes of the first moon landing. What happened to them?
They fell down behind the couch like they do. Can I have a hint?
You can have a hint. Well, there was a Battle of the Network Stars with Charo they really wanted to watch over and over, and so...
Oh, they recorded over them.
They did. They taped over them. Well, you know, you want the government to be more efficient, right? You know how much videotape cost back in the late 1960s? The footage from Apollo 11 was recorded on 45 videotapes, which were eventually reused for other, more important uses, future missions.
a flight director's wedding, this hilarious time when Buzz Aldrin got hit in the crotch with a moon rock. It was... Fortunately, they have found copies of the... You've seen them. We've seen all the footage. Those are from copies, although they're not good copies. But Hollywood special effects experts, CGI guys, have now been working on enhancing the tape. Of course, being Hollywood CGI guys, they couldn't resist improving it. So Neil Armstrong is now accompanied as he lands on the moon by Jar Jar Binks. Who adds some color to the whole otherwise drab experience.
It really wasn't Battle of the Network Stars, though.
No, it wasn't.
Okay. It would have been kind of funny. Like Eric Estrada doing the tug of war.
Yeah. On the moon. All of a sudden, you know. That's one giant step for... And Estrada is into the pit! I don't know if he's going to recover from that, Bob. All right. Kiri, as athletes the world over set their sights on the 2012 London Games, one group in particular dreams of joining their ranks and is campaigning to make what an official Olympic sport?
This has got to be something really dumb. It can't be something like softball. It has to be like...
Remember the show you're on.
Yeah, I know. That's what I'm trying to think. It's like, there can't be a sport involving putting sausage in your pants.
It's probably Scottish. It's probably Scottish.
Okay.
I'll give you a
hint.
Instead of dollar bills, winners will have gold medals stuffed down their garters.
Pole dance? Stripping?
Yes, pole dancing.
Pole dancing.
Roughly 2,500 people have signed an online petition to see pole dancing, or as they like to call it, vertical dancing.
Houston's going to field an awesome team.
They want it recognized as a competitive Olympic sport on par with, you know, quote, rhythmic gymnastics and figure skating, which if you think about, maybe they have a point. Judging by photos on verticaldance.com, which we looked at very carefully, Olympic pole dancers do all the traditional moves, leg splits from varying heights, spins, you know, except they do them wearing track clothes that, surprisingly and disappointingly, they never remove. The petition's author, vertical dance instructor Katie Coates, said, quote, pole dance is acrobatic, gymnastic, technical, and takes a great deal of physical skill and strength to master, earning it a place in the greatest sporting event in the world, unquote. It will have rigorous rules, as befits an Olympic event. For example, there will be a 2-drink minimum for the judges.
Right.
And, of course, no touching.
Yeah. The 3-foot rule is in place.
Exactly. Judges must keep their hands at the sides during the championship lap dance round.
The lighting requirements are probably very rigorous also.
Oh, absolutely. Mo, there's a new U.S. military robot being developed. It's called the Energetically Autonomous Tactical Robot, or EATER, E-A-T-R, EATER. It's capable of seeking out biomass energy from the environment to power itself. This week, the maker of the robot had to formally deny widespread reports that the robot would use what as fuel?
Human flesh.
Exactly right.
Wow!
The EATER robot is designed to go on long-range, long-term military missions. It's eco-friendly. It's independent, that's all super, unless it feasts on the flesh of man, as Fox News and a number of blogs suggested it would. In response to such concerns, the CEO of the company, which makes the robot, said, and I quote him, "We completely understand the public's concern about futuristic robots feeding on the human population, but that is not our mission," unquote.
What?
Boy, I feel better.
Yeah.
What if it's...
At this time, he did not add.
What if it's only feeding on cellulite?
Well, that would be maybe good.
Oh. It would be a kind of liposuction.
Yeah, take care of your cankles for you. That would be fun.
Right. Well, because liposuction isn't very sexy, but to have a robot suck it off of you.
Now, it's kind of like a personal Roomba.
Fox News, which uncharacteristically got quite hysterical about this, the EATR engine might be used in vehicles, including ambulances. Seems like the worst possible application of an engine fueled by people. You're hurt. The EMTs roll you into the back. They close the doors. They rush you to the ER. They get there. They open up. All that comes out is a burp. Coming up, it's lightning, fill in the blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. You can send an email to waitwait@npr.org. You can also go to our website at waitwait.npr.org, where you can find out about attending our weekly live shows right here at the Chase Auditorium in Chicago, or our upcoming shows in Santa Barbara and Pasadena, California. You can also this week go to our website and tell us what you think are the best things you've heard on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, as we put together a compilation of our highlights for later this summer. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Uchenna Alexander from Silver Spring, Maryland.
Uchenna? Uchenna, yes. That's an interesting name. What kind of name is Uchenna?
It is Nigerian. It's Igbo.
Oh, excellent. Cool. And and what do you do there in Silver Spring?
I am a project manager at the Food and Drug Administration.
All right, Silver Spring, of course, a Washington, D.C. suburb.
How does the FDA feel about that flesh-eating robot?
I don't think that falls under our jurisdiction.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
It depends on who it eats, I guess.
Right.
Uchenna, welcome to the show. Nice to have you here. Carl Castle is going to read you three news-related limericks with the last word or phrase missing from each, of course. If you can fill in that last word or phrase correctly on two of the limericks, you'll be a winner. Here is your first limerick.
What I ask of the beasts in their pens is, can they use the solution that cleanses? I'm aware of the facts. We will cure cataracts. But can bears really wear contact
lenses?
Exactly right. What, ladies and gentlemen, is dumber looking than, say, a walrus? A walrus wearing granny glasses. So, S&V Technologies in Germany has created the first contact lenses for animals. No more will zoo-goers have to pretend not to notice when the nearsighted gorilla chats up a particularly comely tree stump. Now these are not the disposable one-a-day types. You know, these are implanted into their eyes, which is good because the last two guys who volunteered to help the lion look for his drop lens never came back.
Are they color contacts?
I hope so. That'd be really cool.
And wait, and these are for all sorts of animals?
I think so, yeah.
It's going to make that owl look so dumb. Owls are supposed to wear frames.
Exactly right.
They don't wear contacts.
Yeah. They're smarter. They're smarter than the other animals. All right. Here is your next limerick.
Noah should have used this on his ark. This device translates canine remarks. What's that spot? You want out? And some food? Well, don't shout. See, now I understand a dog's
bark.
Right. Good news, dog owners. The bilingual voice, the handy gadget that detects six major dog emotions and translates your dog's barks into Japanese, has just been improved. Then you need another thing to translate it from Japanese back in English. Version 2 is out, and now instead of just displaying your dog's thoughts on a screen, it now includes recorded spoken phrases such as, play with me, or I could eat that hamburger, or I could eat your hand. Your call, big guy. Best part, though, is that the bilingual voice now comes complete with an answering machine, sort of, so your dog can record his thoughts for you while you're out of the house. There's nothing better than coming home to a gadget filled with pearls of wisdom like, those pants look delicious. I like shoes, I like shoes, I like shoes, I like shoes.
You beautiful, beautiful pant leg.
And I can't hold it, I can't hold it, I can't hold it. Here is your last limerick.
On its surface, the rocks are restrewn, so you'll see it at night, not at noon. A small step for man to sell all he can. For some ad space, we're using the
moon.
The moon, right. The idea is genius. Just imagine looking up at the sky and seeing an ad for Pepsi, say, emblazoned across the moon. It could happen if inventor David Kent Jones has his way. Jones is accepting bids as low as $46,000 from investors and companies for the 44 different lunar regions. Then he'll have a team of robots create ridges in the lunar dust that form logos, domain names, anything you want. The best part is the ads will reach every person on Earth for thousands of years. Think of it as the perfect marriage between strip mining and advertising. This opens up a whole new field, though, because you can assign any heavenly body. You can have, the U.S. dairy farmers present the Milky Way. You can have the GM Saturn.
You could have Preparation H on Uranus.
Oh! Carl, how did Uchenna do on our show?
Uchenna had three correct answers, Peter, so she wins our prize.
Well done!
Yay! Thank you.
Now on to our final game, Lightning Fill in the Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer is now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
We have a tie for first place. Kerry O'Connor and Mo Rocca each has 3 points. Tom Beaudet has 2.
All right. Tom, you are in third place. You're up first. The clock will start when I begin your first question. Fill in the blank. President Obama said that police in Cambridge, Massachusetts acted stupidly, quote-unquote, in arresting blank.
Henry Louis Gates.
Right. On Wednesday, Congress struck down a bill that would fund the production of more of the Air Force's blanks.
F-22s.
Right, the fighter jets. For the first time since January, the blank rose above 9,000.
The Dow.
Right. On Thursday, 44 people, including 3 mayors, 2 state assemblymen, and 5 rabbis, were arrested in blank on corruption charges.
Oh, let me guess. New Jersey.
Right. I'm so proud. A Lithuanian chamber orchestra recently performed a world premiere symphony that featured a solo performance by blank.
I don't know, Walter the Farting Dog.
So close. Nora the piano-playing cat. Investigators worked to discover who took secret peephole videos of ESPN sports reporter blank.
Aaron Andrews.
Right. Michael Bloomberg might have a race in his hands as he runs for re-election now that blank has thrown his briefs into the ring.
Not Elliot Spitzer.
No. The naked cowboy of Times Square. Bus passengers in China must feel much safer now that buses come equipped with blanks for passengers to use in an emergency.
Tourniquets.
Bricks to break the windows. The bricks are painted yellow with emergency use written on both sides, so don't play with them, kids. According to a spokesman for the Harbin Public Transport Company, it's easy for the passengers to spot them and use them to break a window if something happens. So far, feedback has been good, and the bus company is glad they went with affordable bricks instead of their first idea, actual emergency equipment. Carl, how did Tom do?
Tom had 5 correct answers for 10 more points. He now has 12 points, and Tom has taken the lead.
All right. All right, we have flipped a coin. Kiri has elected to go next, so fill in the blank. President Obama said that the U.S. was on track to withdraw forces from blank as scheduled.
Iraq.
Right. On Wednesday, the Senate narrowly defeated a measure that would have allowed people to carry blanks from state to state.
Oh, concealed weapons.
Right. Days before she was scheduled to leave office, an independent investigator said he had evidence that blank had violated ethics laws.
Sarah Palin.
Right. Despite its place in American history, the blank hotel in Washington, D.C. failed to attract a buyer at auction.
Watergate.
Right. Anyone who purchases a car at Max Motors in Missouri in August will receive a blank free along with it.
AK-47.
In fact, that's the gun, best known for his Pulitzer Prize-winning memoir, Blank. Frank McCourt died at age 78.
Angela's Ashes.
Right. White Sox pitcher Mark Burley became the 18th man in the history of Major League Baseball to blank.
Pitch a perfect game.
Yes, indeed. Mike, a sea lion living in Germany, died at the age of 19 after a blank.
After a long and happy life.
After. That's true, and it ended with a marathon mating session.
Whoa!
Mike was already the father of 12, but the sea lion, described by the zoo as good-natured, couldn't disappoint female sea lions Farah, Tiffy, and Soda. After mating with the three repeatedly, Mike showed signs of fatigue and was taken ashore by staff, where he died of exhaustion. Officials said he would be remembered fondly by visitors to the zoo, not to mention Farah, Tiffy, and Soda. Carl, how did Kiri do in our quiz?
Oh, Kiri was perfect, Peter. 8 correct answers for 16 more points. She now has 19 points and the lead.
So, Carl, how many does Mo need to
win? He'll have to do just as well.
All right, here we go. So how many is that?
8.
8. Here we go. That is a lot. This is for the game, Mo. Fill in the blank. Republican Senator Lindsey Graham said he would support the confirmation of blank to the Supreme Court.
Wise Latina Sonia Sotomayor.
Right. Police and federal officers raided the office of blank's doctor looking for evidence of manslaughter.
Michael Jackson.
Right. On Monday, RNC Chair Michael Steele called President Obama's plans to reform blank socialism.
Healthcare.
Right. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton called for blank to give up its nuclear program.
North Korea.
Right. This weekend, the Today Show featured a story about a woman named Kelly Hildebrand who was getting married to a man named blank.
Kelly Hildebrand.
Exactly right. Gidget, the chihuahua best known for her role in the blank commercials, died at age 15.
Oh, Taco Bell.
Right. She dropped the chalupa. Yeah. Amazon.com announced Wednesday it will pay more than $800 million to buy online shoe store blank.
Online? And there's an online shoe store? It's got to be... Footlocker.com.
No, it's Zappos.com.
I don't know what
After
that is.
Buying...
Never heard of that.
After buying marijuana from him, undercover officers from the Statesville Police Department in North Carolina arrested a blank.
It was, I mean, it must have been, it happened in North Carolina. Elizabeth Edwards.
No. After buying marijuana from him, they busted an undercover officer from the sheriff's office who was trying to bust them for buying marijuana. Now, to be fair, the Statesville officer suspected the guy they were dealing with might be an undercover cop from the sheriff's office. So they called the sheriff's office. They said, hey, is this guy an undercover cop? And the sheriff's office said, well, if we tell him he's an undercover cop, then we blow his cover. So they said no. So everybody was very happy. They thought they were busting a drug dealer. The drug dealer thought he was busting a drug buyer. Both ended up heartbroken. Carl, did Mo do well enough to win?
He needed 8 to tie, but Mo had just 6 correct answers. So with 19 points, Kerry O'Connor is this week's champion.
There you go. Congratulations, Kerry.
Thank you.
In just a minute, we're going to ask our panelists what will be revealed when we examine that newly restored moon landing footage. What big surprise is waiting for us there? But first, let me tell you that support for NPR comes from NPR stations and LendingTree, with the innovative Loan Couch, which provides personalized financial advice for every step of the lending process at LendingTree.com. Subaru, with the safety and performance of all-wheel drive in every vehicle. Love, it's what makes a Subaru a Subaru. And CSX, whose trains move a ton of freight, 436 miles, on 1 gallon of fuel to help reduce fuel consumption. CSX, how tomorrow moves. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and Chicago Public Radio. In association with Urgent Haircut Productions, Doug Berman, executive producer, Philip Godica, writes our limericks, our house manager. Our manager is Don Hall. Our intern is Bethany Williams. Our web guru, Beth Novi. Engineers include Les Dolarchik and Mohamed Mao, along with Gary Yek. Thanks to John Zajac at Chase Bank. BJ Liederman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Ian Chillog, Eva Walchover, and Emily Ecton. Technical direction from Robert Newhouse and Lorna White. The senior producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Michael Danforth. Now, panel, upon closer examination, what will the moon landing footage reveal? Kerry O'Connor.
A glimpse of George Lucas's head.
Tom Baudet.
In that same vein, a rustling in the starscape background shows it is actually only a paper moon hung in a cardboard sky.
Mo Rocca.
The wrist beneath the Neil Armstrong sock puppet.
And if any of those things shows up on the moon panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Carl Castle. Thanks also to Tom Baudet, Mo Rocca, and Kerry O'Connor. Thanks to all of you for listening. I am Peter Sagal, and we'll see you next week. This is NPR, National Public Radio.